We're going to just wait one more minute to see if we get some other counselors here. I had only heard from one counselor that would not be here tonight. We have two counselors who will not be making it. We'll start at 5:16. So while we're waiting, we are going to be having a sustainability meeting. So the sustainability director will be here right after our agenda session. And then also on Monday, we'll have two public hearings. One is the assessment roll for River West and the sanitary sewer connection at 3607 Piedmont Avenue. So we'll open two public hearings Monday night for community members to speak. And why don't we go ahead and get started? Councilor Randorf, do you want to read your resolutions under finance?
Please? Thank you, President Kennedy. Item 4, Resolution 195, is a resolution confirming assessment role for River West development. Item 5, Resolution 198, is a resolution confirming assessment role for sanitary sewer connection at 3607 Piedmont Avenue. Item 6, Resolution 216, is a resolution authorizing the city to expend up to $31,500 of opioid settlement funds over 6 years on the safe storage program housed at the Damiano Center.
Thank you, Vice President Randorf. And I did have, are there any questions on any of those? Councilor Anderson.
Thank you, President Kennedy. I'm just curious if there's anyone who can give us some background on Resolution 216. The safe storage program.
President Kennedy, Councilor Anderson, I'm happy to speak to that. Is there a specific question you have?
No, it's just I don't know anything about it. I'm sorry, I haven't had the opportunity to read the resolution, which I will do right now.
Very briefly, President Kennedy, Councilor Anderson, what we are asking to fund is the infrastructure behind providing storage for folks who are unsheltered or in need of a place to store belongings. And Damiano's been willing to host it. Mr. Currier's here and able to speak to that portion of it, but this is a six-year agreement that would provide for upfront costs to provide the bins and shelving and the infrastructure there, and then also pay for an annual amount for disposal should that be needed. This is something that has been part of the conversation over the last couple of years with the Stepping On Up group, in addition to just our understanding of the needs of that community. And so we're really excited, honestly, to bring this forward and get that project moving ahead of spring and summer.
Thank you for that, Mr. Shuckman. And if I may, our commitment at this point is a total of $31,500 over the whole 6 years.
Kennedy, Councilor Anderson, that's correct.
So much.
Randorf,
Vice President Randorf. Thank you, President Kennedy. I have two questions. One is, what is the total universe of opioid settlement dollars that we're going to be receiving, is the one. And then the second one is, you know, the laundry list of things we can spend that money on is pretty extensive here. And I'm getting kind of lost as where do we know that this will plug into the appropriate use?
Vice President Randorf, that's a great question. And the reason that we are bringing this forward now instead of as part of a larger funding package is that there's a lot going on with the opioid settlement funds. They're coming in kind of scattershot, and so we're working to sort that out, better understand what's one time and what's ongoing, and we would like to have a little bit better handle on that before we present a larger plan to the council for how to spend that money. But in this case, this is a timely need and an appropriate one for spending that money, and so the administration's ask, my ask is that you approve this, and I will commit to you that we will bring a more extensive plan forward as soon as we have a full handle on kind of what we think that picture looks like, because it's just not super clear at the moment, and we're trying to get our hands around what those settlement dollars are and where they're coming from and how long they'll last.
Thank you.
Councilor Wall.
Thank you, President Kennedy. And thank you, Vice President Rando, for I had some similar questions. This sounds like a great opportunity and investment into our community. I also recognize that Executive Director Greer is here, and I just wanted to ask if he would be willing to speak on this and the effects of it and how he sees the impact of this going forward.
Welcome.
I can follow up with one question. I understand there was a fire at the Damiano Center, some structural damage. I'm just kind of curious, as we're utilizing that space, is there any concern about the safe and healthy of safety and health of workers going up to that space? Or I'm just kind of curious. I know I have you up here, so that's why I was wondering what the state of the Damiano Center was in that third floor, because I know it was a beautiful theater area, and I'm just curious if as that space is being utilized for this project, how else that's being developed. Thank you so much. I thank you for expanding the. I just wanted to emphasize the intent of my question was not to ask about safety of the items being stored, just the safety of the building. I had the privilege of with you to explore that third floor, and I remember how beautiful it was. But then how that, you know, how it's being currently used as storage, and like so just wondering what that state was and if we'll ever see a beautiful theater up there. But thank you for that response.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. On the way there.
Thank you for being here today.
We have one more question for you.
Yeah, if I could. Thank you, President Kennedy. Just so for me and for the public to understand, you know, obviously this is a solution that's fixing a problem. Can you paint us a picture of what the problem is that we're solving with this clearly, so we see what's happening with their stuff now and what's going on in the as is? Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Anderson.
Thank you, President Kennedy. For one thing, my button will not turn off. I did try to turn it off, but since I get called on anyway, I just want to say thank you to Mr. Currier. I'm just like, for being a bridge between your guests and the City Council today. And it means a lot that you are here and the work that you do.
A lot of people are involved in this.
Councillor Wall?
Not a question for it. Thank you so much for being here. But as we are continuing with this project, I had mentioned to administration and brought this up at a previous resolution, but I would love to see more safe containers for needles to be, you know, where folks, something similar to right outside of RAND, to have like safe containers where folks can safely dispose of needles. I know we've gotten a lot of emails about needles and syringes, so providing that resource, I think, could be something that comes out of this or whatever, however we can brainstorm. But thank you. Yes. Yes.
No, that's okay. I do have a question for you on the resolution, but go ahead and complete this quickly. Thank you. Could you let us know how many folks you plan on serving with this program and what that sort of looks like logistically? Are they there? They can only come during certain business hours. You're not open all night, I'm guessing. But, yeah.
That's our intent.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing more about that. It sounds sort of like a bank vault sort of system for people. Thank you. If you could find out numbers down the road, I'd be curious. Any other questions or comments? All right, you may have a seat. We're ready for you, Councillor Alstead.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Item number 7. Resolution 232, a resolution authorizing a renewal of contract 21565 with Northeast Service Cooperative doing business as MN Telecom for the installation, use, and maintenance of fiber optic cable connections between city facilities for up to 10 years for an estimated annual amount of $119,016.16.
Oh, six, no, no sense.
16.
And I think my mic is going in and out. I'm not sure what they did to the system today, but it's not perfect. Nothing's perfect, but it's not working well. Thank you. 16 and no sense. We will go on to Councillor Awal.
President Kennedy. item 8, resolution 231. Resolution approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of heavy equipment mechanic. Item 9, resolution 233, resolution approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of industrial equipment technician. Item 10, resolution 234, resolution approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of welder. Item 11, resolution 235, resolution approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of seasonal street laborer. Item 12, resolution 236, resolution approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of utility maintenance worker. Item 13, resolution 237, resolution approving proposed amendments to the specifications for the existing civil service classification of bridge operator. And if I may, these are just routine updates to the classifications of that we've been seeing. This is just a bulk coming through, right? And then just a question. I'm kind of curious. After these have been updated, do they kind of go straight into their existing job duties, or are these like positions up for to be hired?
President Kennedy, Councillor Owl, I guess I don't have a solid answer for every single one of these, but in general, if it's an amendment, it's an existing position that we would just be adjusting the job description or the pay scale or some portion of it. And those items need to come through the city council, and so that's why we're here. But there's items that have come through recently that are ones that people would be able to apply for, and then there's some that are just amendments, and it just depends on the individual item.
We are ready for you, Councillor Anderson, please.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Oh, my mic is on, but it doesn't say it there. Okay, I surrender. Resolution 226, vacating an easement from the United States of America.
I know.
I've never gotten to read that before. Vacating an easement from the United States of America over a portion of the Civic Center in downtown Duluth and accepting a replacement easement over the same.
Councilor Alstead.
Thank you, President Kennedy. CAO Shuckman, can you just give the public a little bit of an overview of what it means by the United States of America is vacating an easement?
President Kennedy, Councilor Alstead, I had a similar reaction to seeing that as the title, but what it means is we have work that will be happening outside of City Hall, outside of the county building, and outside of the federal building on the plaza this summer, and this is work that then requires an updated easement. This is an easement that dates from 1929, and so things have changed, and so we're going to be doing that work, and this is just the real estate kind of title work around that. As we prep for that.
Thank you. The next item is under myself, Committee of the Whole. It's Resolution 214, Item 15, a resolution establishing the City of Duluth election precincts. And I will just say that there is a companion ordinance that goes along with this. This is based off of conversations with the Gary community after the census happened. Some of the boundaries that were drawn displaced some of the real elderly community members that were having to go a long way to vote. And so we had a meeting with state legislatures and our clerk, city clerk, and other officials, and had recognized that we're able to actually create another precinct so they could actually vote across the street. And most of these folks are elderly that we're talking about, that we're making this change for. So I will yield. Councilor Randorf.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Number of this new precinct?
35.
And all other changes that we approved last year or earlier this year, all remain the same?
I will let you speak to that, Clerk Johnson. I do know there's a map there. There were some boundary changes overall, and those are the ones you're speaking of.
Yeah.
But there weren't any other changes.
Significant changes to the 3rd District because we grew. And so in order to spread that out, a portion of the 3rd now is in the 4th. And so that's included in this map.
President Kennedy, Vice President Randorf, that's correct. This adjustment is limited solely to the Gary New Duluth creation of Precinct 35. There are no changes to any other precinct boundaries or legislative boundaries within the city otherwise.
And as we move towards primary and election, will these folks know that are now voting somewhere else? Do they get something in the mail saying, hey, here's where you vote, here's your new precinct?
Yes, all voters will receive a mailing indicating where their polling place is, so they should receive advance notice.
And does that happen like in July or?
President Kennedy, Vice President Randorf, it's hard to say. The county sends out mailings. Last election cycle, they were sent out in June, but I think some of them weren't received until later in July. So it's a little bit hazy when they'll go out, but they will certainly go out this summer in advance of the primary election.
Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe some of our media can help get the word out. And social media. I'm asking. It's a question. All right, we will move on. Sorry, I'm lost here. So which item are we on next? Thank you. Councilor Mayo, who is not here, so I'll be asking, I'm just going to go down the line, Vice President Randorf, if you could read in for Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Item 16, Resolution 194, is a resolution authorizing a 5-year master services agreement with American Engineering Testing, Inc., for professional geotechnical and material testing services for an annual estimated amount of $150,000 and a total contract amount not to exceed $750,000. Item 17, Resolution 209, is a resolution authorizing a second amendment to the professional services agreement with Green ESPEL PLLP, extending the term of the agreement to December 31, 2024. Item 18, Resolution 218, is a resolution authorizing an amendment to an agreement with Frontier Energy, Inc. for professional services related to public works and utilities, commercial and industrial conservation improvement program for an increase of $70,000 and a total amount not to exceed $145,000. Item 19, Resolution 220, is a resolution rescinding Resolution 221004 and withdrawing the Council's notice of intent for reconstruction of Fifth Street Alley beginning at 21st Avenue East and extending to 22nd Avenue East and to assess the cost thereof. Item 20, Resolution 224, is a resolution authorizing an agreement with MSA Professional Services for professional engineering services to provide design services for the Woodland Booster Station Improvements Project in the amount of $340,192. Item 21, Resolution 228, is a resolution accepting a permanent easement for street and utility purposes from SMDC Medical Center over and under and across portions of vacated 6th Avenue easement in the East Hillside neighborhood for nominal consideration. Item 22, Resolution 230, is a resolution vacating a portion of platted Evergreen Road and the street easement that was created or implied in City Council Resolution 78393, recorded as document number 412998, in the office of the St. Louis County Registrar of Titles, both affecting property and the plat of the rearrangement of lots E and F, Gray Salon Farms, First Division. Item 23 is Resolution 238, a resolution authorizing the proper city officials to request and accept from St. Louis County on behalf of the state of Minnesota certain tax forfeited lands for road and utility purposes. Item 24, Resolution 239, is a resolution authorizing the purchase and installation of sanding body equipment from Burt's Truck Equipment of Moorhead, Inc. in the amount of $161,361.
Counselors, any questions? Counselor Anderson.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Regarding item 17, Resolution 209, and the Green ESPO PLLP. If I'm not mistaken, this would be for the issues regarding the Public Utilities Commission setting of that whatever that particular water runoff rate is, da-da-da-da-da. So that's been going on for a couple of years, that lawsuit. Is that true or no?
President Kennedy, Councillor Anderson, I could not tell you exactly how long it's been going on, but it hasn't been a couple of years at this point. Very complex litigation that we are still doggedly working on.
Yeah, and I just, we had at that point, I remember that when we were initially hired this, probably this same organization, because they're sort of experts in this particular area, correct? Thank you.
Vice President Randorf.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Item 24, we had to go to Moorhead to get sanding body equipment. Is it because we just don't have any vendors this close, local vendors that could provide that kind of equipment and installation?
President Kennedy, Vice President Randorf, I'm not able to speak to the availability locally. I know that this was purchased under the state contract, and very often that is what allows us to get a good price, but very often that is prescriptive about from where we would source something.
Okay, we'll move on. Councilor Owl, can you read in for Councilor Tominick, Public Safety, item number 25.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Item 25, Resolution 212, resolution authorizing proper city officials to accept a grant award from the Office of National Drug Control Policy, High Intensity Drug Trafficking Areas, HIDTA program, HIDA, to be used for expenses incurred during participation in the Great Lakes Superior Drug Corridor Initiative.
one more. Item number 26.
26, resolution 217, resolution authorizing agreement with St. Louis County to perform police services pursuant to 2021 Operation Stone Garden Grant operations under order and accepting reimbursement through St. Louis County in the amount of $52,093.
Counselors, any questions? Counselor Anderson, Counselor Owl, are you? Did you have a question?
Okay, sorry. Yes, thank you, President Kennedy. I was just curious if administration could expand on the grant awarded from the National Drug Control Policy and where that funding would be kind of going towards.
President Kennedy, Councillor Owl, the funding when received goes into the Duluth Police Grant Programs Fund specifically for this work. And then it's part of the drug task force work that we do as part of the Lake Superior Drug Corridor Initiative. And so it goes in to fund staff costs and time to do investigative and enforcement work.
Thank you so much for the explanation. I guess I just wanted an expansion of like what exactly the DPD is doing in that program for the public.
President Kennedy, Councillor Owl, that is something that I think would be best, the best information to come from DPD. So I'll ask Chief Sanoa to follow up with you on that. He'll have a better handle on that than I will.
Okay. Councillor Anderson, could you read in for Councillor Hobbs, item number 27?
My pleasure, President Kennedy. Resolution 215 authorizing the First Amendment to Agreement C-24400 with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Lake Superior Coastal Program Grant for the replacement of Beach Dune Crossing Boardwalk near the Lafayette Community Center. Resolution 225 authorizing an agreement with J&M Displays Incorporated for the creation and execution of a fireworks display for July 4th, 2023 for a total not to exceed $60,000. And Resolution 227 authorizing application to the U.S. Forest Service Community Forest and Open Space Conservation Grant Program for up to $250,000 to acquire 15 acres from the Duluth Cemetery Association for recreation and preservation.
Thank you. Councillor Anderson, oh, that's right. Your number is up. Your hand is up. But you're... We'll go to Vice President Randorf.
Thank you so much, President Kennedy. I have two questions. The first one's on item 27. I know that grant is $108,000 for the dune replacement for the Lafayette Community Center. Wondering if you could describe a little bit of what that restoration will look like. Like, what will that cover? It talked a little bit about boardwalk and dune replacement. If you could walk us through a little bit of what that'll look like.
President Kennedy, Vice President Randorf, this is work that is done to protect the sensitive beach dune habitat is the language that we use. And so what this is doing is replacing dune crossings so that we're able to do that in a way that doesn't impact what's underneath them. And so it's a grant for two boardwalk replacements, and due to rising costs, we are splitting that grant into two different pieces. So phase one will be in the area of the Lafayette Community Center, and then phase two would replace the boardwalk at the Park Point Recreation Area. And we've applied for funding for phase two, and that we've been notified that that is in pre-award status, meaning we're likely to get that. And so we should hear more this summer about what that second phase will look like. But that is what we're doing, is kind of protecting what's there as the work goes on around it.
If I may follow up, so in addition to boardwalk work, will it be any of the actual replacement, sand replacement, or
President Kennedy, Vice President Randorf, as I understand it, this is specifically about the boardwalk and protecting what's underneath it.
I had a follow-up. Did you want me to stay?
Yes, and then do you want to read it? Read in your ordinance?
Well, I have a question on number 28. Okay. If memory serves me, the fireworks went up from 50,000 to 55, and now it's up to 60. Is this another increase of $5,000? And if so, at some point, do we just tell a J&M, you got 55, do it? There's not one more dime in the bucket for more?
President Kennedy, Vice President Randorf, I guess I'm, is that a rhetorical question or are you? Okay.
Each time, and is there a place where we can say, no, you get 55? We want 55 worth.
Vice President Randorf, that is certainly something we could do. And at the moment, we have continued to support doing this. This is being paid for out of tourism tax. This is something that does bring people down to the lakefront in the summer. But certainly, as with everything that we do, we could always call time on spending that money. But that is probably a larger discussion than tonight.
Does the process work where they submit the invoice of what that project will look like? It's like a project bid where to do your firework display this year, it's going to be this much. And so it ends up being like more than it was last year.
And Kennedy, Vice President Randorf, I don't know that I'm able to speak to the exact process that we use to award this. I think this is our longtime vendor for it. Last year, those costs went up as costs went up for everything. And so I don't have in front of me the exact cost from last year. And you referenced 55,000. But I imagine they are giving us their true cost to produce the similar display as last year. And we're choosing to continue that.
Councilor Wall.
Thank you, President Kennedy. I just wanted to follow up about last year when this resolution came forward. It's an annual one that we kind of approve. I had asked about looking into fireworks that were accommodations in fireworks, that finding fireworks that are not as noise polluting kind of harmful to individuals with PTSD or animals or, other veterans. And I understand that the administration did some research into that. And right now, as of now, there isn't really a viable way to kind of go down that path. I just wanted to follow up with the public, but if administration wants to follow up with anything else.
President Kennedy, Councilor Owl, I don't have a lot to add other than that you are correct. There's not an option that's readily available to us at this time.
Ready to move on? Thank you. President Randorf will go to our ordinances to be read for the first time.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Item 30, Ordinance 9, is an ordinance amending Duluth City Code Section 41-24, modifying council approval requirements for department head purchases and awarding contracts. Item 31, Ordinance 11, an ordinance amending the PR District Regulation Plan for Ramsey Village to designate land near 52nd Avenue West. Yeah.
Councilor Anderson.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Were there?
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
So thank let's you. Just pause for a minute and see okay. if there's any questions. Thank you. Any questions on Ordinance 9?
Well, thank you so much, President Kennedy. Just to follow up, because we know this one came up before. I know I questioned it, and it's back in front of us. Can you just help us walk through the nuances that are changing on this? Is the reason why it's back?
Kennedy, Vice President Randorf, one of the things that when you change an ordinance, sometimes you find that another ordinance references it. And in this case, that's what's happened. We found a spot where a different ordinance references that. So we're asking to make that change to follow the ordinance change that has already come through. In addition, we're asking to take the opportunity to increase the amount that department heads can approve from $5,000 to $10,000. And what that will do is lower the number of items that our purchasing agent has to review as well. Anything over $5,000 right now, the purchasing agent needs to review. This would make that $10,000. And our purchasing agent, Ms. Stahlvig, here as is Director Carlson, and can speak to this, but it's a significant workload given the number of items that are over that dollar amount that the city would work through over the course of a year. And so with the staff resources that we have, we want to be really thoughtful and careful about how much work we're putting on staff unnecessarily, and this is one of those opportunities where we can reduce her workload, allow her to focus on things that are more substantial, and also still have the appropriate accountability for them.
Thank you. I think we're ready to move on. Councilor Anderson, ordinance is to be read for the first time, planning economic development.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Ordinance 11, am I in the right place?
Item number 31.
Ordinance 11, an ordinance amending the RP District Regulating Plan for Ramsey Village to designate land near 52nd Avenue West and Eleanor Street to be type 8 mixed-use commercial and residential building, to designate parts of lots 12 through 18, block 168, West Duluth 7th Division, to be type 8 building, and to add type 8 building to existing type 6 building on lots 24 through 28, block 169, West Duluth 7th Division. Ordinance 12, amending the official zoning map of the City of Duluth to reclassify 660 acres from MNU to AP Airport District, and to reclassify 110 acres from MUB to AP on land currently used for airport operations at the Duluth International Airport. And ordinance 13, amending the official zoning map of the City of Duluth to reclassify one half block south of West 1st Street between 19th Avenue West and 20th Avenue West from mixed use business to form district 5F5. If I may, one obvious question that comes up for me is on ordinance 13. Is this being done specifically at the request of a particular developer, or is there a plan for this land?
President Kennedy, Councilor Anderson, we are not at a point yet where we have an active development going into that site, but we are preparing for that possibility through this ordinance change and this action. So it is a hopeful change. We have developers that are interested in the area, and so we're working to be proactive to make sure that the site is ready for potential uses as we move that forward.
Bill, thank you.
I do have a question on that one. If counselors, why would it go to a form district from MUB? And I'm wondering if there's maybe a description on that from planning for us, Mr.
President Kennedy. I believe that both Director Fleege and Deputy Director Fulton are here, and your question is past my expertise on the zoning code, so I would ask that Director Fleege will take care of that. Thank you.
Clarification. I know enough to get into good trouble, I'll say. I used to say to be dangerous, but I know enough to get into good trouble. So in MUB, there's many other zonings that could happen before that to just go straight to a form district. And I know a form district is less restrictive, and that's usually where we can put buku numbers of vacation rentals.
Director Fleish, I'm sorry to say that your microphone is not really picking up. If you could
lift the, can you lift the?
It's on. I think there's just a problem with the feed.
Or you could come up to one of these microphones if you'd like.
You'd be better to use another microphone. I think the settings
got
changed.
Come on up here if you will, please, to one of these chairs, and we'll maybe.
Not loves. President Kennedy, counselors, yes, this site is the former Kemp's Creamery, not not the Love Creamery. And it has been demolished and prepped, and they have site control. So as COA Schuckman noted, it's really the first step to prepare it, but the likely development would be a mixed use, and a housing project is really what they're potentially looking at. So by creating the Forum District, that does provide more flexibility and is consistent with the Craft District as it moves up that street. So, you know, I think it was passed by Planning Commission 6-0. And again, it's consistent with the nature of that that community. So, and what's going on down there and what we hope to facilitate.
Another question, but if I could follow up with this one. So there would be unlimited vacation rentals in a Forum District. And I'm just wondering, how is the neighbors, because I do know there's still some residents across the street, and it does fit in with the growth that's happening there. Have we had conversations with neighbors about the unlimited possibility of vacation rentals in a Forum District?
I think as COA Schuckman, it's premature. I mean, we don't have a firm development yet going in there. I think what the Forum District does provide, it provides some flexibility. The intention is not for it to become vacation rental. And if there is city assistance, we would write that requirement into the development agreement, limiting that potential.
You could write into the development agreement that you could limit the number of vacation rentals in a Forum District, even though it's unlimited?
For as long as the development agreement was in force, yes.
I'm going to move on. Councillor Awal, thank you for that. Anderson, are you still on? You relented?
Intentionally on.
Okay.
Thank you. This is a broad question. Not specific to this particular ordinance, but to all the work that's been going on in Lincoln Park and the transformation that's been going on in that neighborhood for years already. But I take that opportunity just to bring up the word of gentrification and the ongoing impact of the transformation in this neighborhood on the existing neighborhood. And I'm just curious, you know, you're here, Mr. Director Fleege, and Deputy Director Fulton is here. Half of the council is here. But I'm just curious how, because I don't really see the impact. There's not such a transformation happening really anywhere else. The potential is here for downtown as we see things happen there. But how are we conscious as a department and as a community about the impact of this transformation on the existing community?
I think I may give this to Deputy Director Fulton. I think, you know, we've done a lot of planning, small area plans. This is all consistent with the comprehensive plan to encourage development, and certainly the brew or the craft district has really grown. But there is sensitivity. That's why, you know, it's only half a block that we've added into the Forum District. But I am going to give it to Adam, because he can probably give a little bit more color around the discussion that occurred at Planning Commission when they approved this.
Thank you, President Kennedy. Councillor Anderson, the, you know, broader goals related to reinvestment in Lincoln Park are being viewed through the lens of what was adopted in the Lincoln Park Small Area Plan. And so that Small Area Plan called for this type of reinvestment, recognizing that the industrial base has shifted. We would still love to see those jobs at that creamery in this location. But they have elected to do that in a different spot at this point in time. And so as we're seeing reinvestment in a site that had been blighted is now vacant, we are still focused on affordable housing. And so that is part of what we are looking at through the use of the Affordable Housing Trust Fund and through any instance where there is any public assistance, that we are striving to achieve a level of affordability in any given housing project. We're also working closely with our housing partners, such as Center City Housing or One Roof Community Housing, to look at affordable projects to make sure we are achieving that level of reinvestment, at the same time preserving affordability within neighborhoods, because gentrification is a thing that we want to be paying close attention to.
And is there an assumption on your part that this piece of land would be potentially desirable to an organization like Center City or One Roof for development of housing?
President Kennedy, Councilor Anderson, the ownership of this is local at this point in time. It is not by a housing entity, and so I am not aware of what type of housing development would be planned for this, or mixed-use development, whether that would definitely or definitely not include affordable housing. What I would say is broadly, though, we do recognize there's a level of reinvestment in Lincoln Park that was long planned for, and city policies were really designed to help foster that level of reinvestment in Lincoln Park as a positive thing for that neighborhood. With that, we are trying to make sure that things like One Roof's Community Land Trust program have a place in this neighborhood, as well as other specific sites when identified by our partners in affordable housing, are supported by the city through whatever mechanisms we have available to provide for that affordable housing and the level of continuity for people who are in that neighborhood to stay in the neighborhood.
I appreciate that consciousness. Thank you.
Any other counselors? I do have another question. That's for y'all. I'm looking at item 31, Ordinance 11. Could you just break that down for us a little bit more? You're amending a district near 52nd Avenue West, and it sounds like you're adding an addition. Oh, and I apologize. I haven't read it yet, but I will go back and read it. But if you can give me an overview, it'll help me slog through a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
Counselors, the proposal related to the Wadena site is a proposal that would allow for a fully affordable project by Center City Housing to proceed. This area in the Ramsey neighborhood is subject to a traditional neighborhood plan that was adopted in the late 90s. And so that traditional neighborhood is very prescriptive about what building types are permitted on different locations. And so this modification to the ordinance establishing that TND regulation will simply allow for the project that is proposed by Center City to proceed, which includes 60 affordable units in that location.
Any other questions, counselors? I believe you're relieved. Thank you so much. One more item. My mic is being funny as well. Item number 34, it's Ordinance 10 under Committee of the Whole, an ordinance amending Section 2-42 of the Duluth City Code 1959 as amended, relating to the assignment of election precincts. And councilors, we did discuss this a little bit earlier with the other resolution. All of these will need to go through two reads just for the community's knowledge. And I believe, are there any questions, comments, or upcoming business before we go to our report? All right. Councilor Owl, are you?
Yeah, thank you, President Kennedy. Just acknowledging that today is the first day of Ramadan. I am fasting. I'm excited to break my fast at 7:30. Started my fast today at 5:50, but all blessings and blessings to all the Muslim community in the Twin Ports, and have a blessed Ramadan. So thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. So are we ready? Do we want to pause or want to keep going? We have our Kindly Action Progress update. We're ready to go? All right. Thank you, everyone. Is Ms. Granley here? You might want to come up here. Or you can sit by Mr. Shuckman or... wherever you want, either place. Yeah, take that one. You probably won't get another opportunity. I think so, yep. No, that one's... Oh, that's me. Try again.
Testing. There we go.
All right, thank you, President Kennedy and Vice President Randorf. Tonight's update is just a briefing on our climate action work plan, which was created in response to the climate emergency declaration in April of 2021. Just a reminder that I am the sustainability officer for the City of Duluth, and I'm a one-person office, but I take a whole city approach to this work. I focus on relationship building, working across departments, applying for cooperative grants, building capacity, and supporting community needs and initiatives. And I do my work through listening to and learning from my colleagues across the city and our community, then informing and influencing our decision-making and supporting and inspiring change across departments and community sectors. But I do have a lot of help, and so I just want to take a second to acknowledge Parker and Lydia and Ella, my interns and VISTAs that work with me, who are amazing and help me get my work done, and then a variety of groups that I work with, including the Climate Smart Group, the Great Lakes One Water Partnership, ICLEI, USDN, and Minnesota Green Step Cities for their support. And Lydia made me include the picture at the top because she said, you have to tell everybody that you were the Minnesota Climate Adaptation Partnership Award winner for the individual in 2022. So thanks to Lydia for making me include that. Also want to just publicly thank the Energy Plan Commission. They are an advisory board on energy and sustainability, and they are truly our partners in this work. And lastly, I want to just mention that all of the progress that I will mention tonight and all of the progress that is listed in the Climate Action Progress Report for 2022 was accomplished not just through my office, but through a coordination team of the city's Sustainability Advisory Team. Or CSAT. And this is a cross-departmental team that really works to prioritize our goals, share information and knowledge, support each other in our efforts, and they helped create the Climate Action Work Plan. That's the list of members from 2022. Membership has grown because folks have heard about the team and want to be part of it. We're now 18 members across 11 city departments. So just as a reminder, the Climate Action Work Plan was created in response to the Climate Emergency Declaration. The 9 strategies that we work on that were determined in the Climate Emergency Declaration are listed on the right, and we track our progress based on those strategies. And the plan is really a 5-year plan. We didn't want to talk about what are we going to do 20 years from now? What can we do in the next 5 years to help our city be prepared for climate change and also reduce our impact on climate change? And so it's really in phases. We're working mostly on phase one, which is to build the foundation, drive down our emissions, strengthen community resilience, eliminate barriers through policy work, and seek financial and workforce pathways. Phase two is community decarbonization, which will take a long time, and we don't necessarily know all the pathways to get there just yet. So we're focused on the 5 years of action based on those 9 strategies. Where our emissions come from, when I say municipal emissions, that is city-owned emissions. These are the greenhouse gas emissions that we emit in our daily work to operate the city. So it includes these categories: water and wastewater treatment, which is dominant in our energy use, our buildings and facilities, which is the second highest category, our vehicle fleet emissions, which is another quarter of our footprint and the only piece of our footprint that's actually growing instead of shrinking, and then streetlights and traffic signals, which is the smallest area, and a lot of work has been done and accomplished there. Since 2016, we have experienced a 31% reduction in our city-caused emissions. So when we talk about phase one, we're talking about these emissions, and they total 14,500 tons of CO2 equivalent, which is carbon emission equivalent.
A question. So the 31% reduction, when did you start your job, or when did this position or department begin?
President Kennedy, the position was started in 2020, late February 2020, I think, right before the pandemic. But this work and a measurement of emissions
back from 2008 and 2016 come from contractors who were hired to quantify emissions for the city. So there wasn't a person in the position, but there was a contractor working on inventories of our greenhouse gas emissions.
Okay. It wasn't just naturally occurring because we're just really good at.
Wish. That's a great question. No, there's been a lot of work done on buildings, LEDs, retrofits. The biggest portion of our emissions that were reduced before I started actually came from water and wastewater treatment through replacing water mains that were leaking across the city.
So. I do have another question, Councilor Anderson.
Thank you, President Kennedy, and thank you, Mindy, for being here. I'm just curious, the water and wastewater treatment. So I'm obviously I live in the city, and you know we have this thing about we live in Duluth and we have plenty of water, and you know woe to those poor people in Arizona, but here we can just run our tap. But if I look at this, you know that water that runs through my tap, that goes through the shower, that goes through the toilet, accounts for 34% of our greenhouse gas emissions. Treatment of that and however that's processed. So that would, am I correct in assuming that my paying attention, that all of us in our homes paying attention to the water that we run through our taps would impact this number?
President Kenny, Vice President Randorf, water and energy are inextricably linked. You can't unlink them. It takes energy to produce water, and it takes water to produce energy when you're burning fossil fuels. So they're very much linked. Our water use is energy use. Yes, you are correct. So when we have leaking water mains, that's a lot of wasted energy, not just wasted water. But over 10 years, actually one of the first calls I made when I started my job was to our city utility engineer, Eric Schaefer, and I said, what the heck did you do to reduce emissions 30% from your department over the last 10 years? And he said, we just were replacing leaking water mains and replacing leaking pump stations and things and just taking care of our infrastructure. So that had a really big impact on our carbon emissions.
And is there any idea of what it would mean for me, for as a household, if I was to reduce my water usage by 30%, how much would that impact this 34% of?
Great question. I don't know the exact percentage, but what we're taking credit for here is not your use at home, but the amount of energy it takes to get that clean water to your household. Yeah, well, water and energy are linked. It's a great line of question. So municipal emissions are about 14,000 tons. Our community-wide emissions, which includes Councillor Anderson, your footprint, and everyone's footprint here, is over 800,000 tons. And this data comes from the Regional Indicators Report, but I just wanted you to have a sampling of what our community-wide footprint is. This will be the phase two. How we're going to reduce that big orange bar of our energy use as a community is part of that phase two. That's everybody's household. That's everybody's driving their car in the green. That's everybody's waste that goes to the landfill in purple. So we're not quite there with solutions to phase two. We're focused on phase one, but this is the big challenge that's coming our way. If we reduce municipal emissions to zero, we would effectively reduce our community-wide emissions by only 2%. So this is not just a city issue, it's a community-wide issue, and we're striving to get there. To quickly summarize our progress on the Climate Action Work Plan, I had the city sustainability advisory team work on sort of a green light, red light, yellow light approach. And so we looked at all of the 83 actions and sub-actions. And in 2022, we had made some progress on just about 60% of those emissions or those actions. And we've made a great deal of progress on about 34% in the green. And there's been some that we just haven't made any progress on or very minimal progress on. And those are mostly the ones that require the most amount of funding or capacity, or new capacity. They're things that really doesn't fit into anybody's job. So overall, of the 83 actions and sub-actions, we're making some pretty significant progress. And in the report online, which is on the link on the main slide here, you can go in and look at the tables of the actions that have been completed. I wanted to give you some highlights today on how we're working on these. And so we'll go through these quickly, but I'm happy to answer questions. Yeah.
edges?
Say, this is a significant one, or is there any that pop out?
Well, one that is just like, yep, we said we're going to do it, and we're doing it, is to increase the resiliency of our water plant and get funding to add a second transformer and backup power and new switchgear. So that's one that's like, okay, great. Project's not done, but the funding is in hand.
Councilor Aul, are you? I have a couple of folks in the queue, and I'm not really confident of the system tonight. So could you just let me know if you're?
Yeah, I did have a question, but then I saw your next slide. I was going to ask about fleet vehicles and the kind of we were talking about EV chargers and switching to more EV fleet vehicles, but I did see in your slides coming up that that's going to be addressed. So I'll just let that question go and wait on that. Thank you.
And you did not have a question. Thank you. We can move on, please. Thank you.
So how we're working to reduce those emissions is working on our buildings, working within our utility systems, which we've talked about a little bit, and then working on our fleet. I mentioned the fleet emissions are the one area of our footprint that's growing. The rest of them are reducing. We think part of that growth is due to better tracking. We had a fleet coordinator that came in who was a real pro at data. And Paul Johnson, in his year and a half of service here at the city, really improved data collection. So part of that increase is just better data. But the other part could be things like, more snow and more snow events, so more gear out on the streets and burning more emissions, and then also a bounce back effect after COVID sort of reduced our fleet emissions. So, but overall, we're staying pretty steady on our emissions. How we're working on some of these in buildings is just upgrading the buildings, adding new lighting, HVAC systems, like the project happening here and probably disrupting some of your meetings, counselors, with the noise. The building controls are also a nice area where we're just trying to not waste energy when nobody's in the building and use setbacks at night to save energy. So that work is ongoing work, and it was going on before I got here. But some of the work that we're doing is helping to support that work and bring in resources to get more of that work done. In our utilities, our Duluth Energy Systems has a 5-year coal elimination plan that they just presented to the city, which is great. And they've also been working on thermal grid updates, just each pipe that they upgrade and wrap and switch to hot water instead of steam, and all of the customers that they serve to do that transition as well. I mentioned our water utility replacements and some of the advanced metering that they're doing. They now have advanced metering to identify water leaks more quickly, which was a great project that was funded through ARP dollars. And then, of course, our natural gas utility, which works on conservation improvement program stuff, but was a partner in writing a geothermal grant that I'll get to in a second. And then they're working on how to suss out the ECO Act provisions that the state passed and how they might use those to reduce emissions also in their programming.
I just wanted to ask a question about the AR funds that is being used for part of the work you're doing. Is there enough funding to complete the full project, or do you see a gap? And where will that funding come from? Because ARP funding is not forever.
That project actually was completed.
Thank you.
Councillor Aul asked about fleet. Some of the actions that we're taking there is with the fleet manager, Paul Johnson, we worked on a fleet replacement policy, a vehicle replacement policy. Now when there's a vehicle replacement request, we're looking at, okay, could this be transitioned to a hybrid or in a fully electric vehicle? And so we have sort of a cascading series of questions. Can you use an EV? If not, what about a hybrid vehicle? If that's not available, what is the most efficient vehicle in the class that you require for your vehicle before we end up purchasing it from the list? So I think that will act as sort of a sieve for us to get those easy replacements done quickly, and there are some available. But the problem that we're having right now, one of the problems identified by departments was, hey, we don't even have enough capital money to replace what we need, and you're asking me to spend more on hybrids and electric vehicles. And so we established a gap funding for EVs and hybrids for departments who would like to electrify so that we could close that gap for them and pay that extra cost. We've been unable to use that too extensively, only because of supply chain issues currently. But we do have one hybrid ladder truck on order for fire department, which will help them use electricity when they're on site instead of burning diesel which hopefully could reduce the amount of stress on a situation or a site too by not having that diesel rig, you know, idling in the background, like keep the site quieter, respond to emergencies and that kind of thing. And so that will be the first hybrid fire truck that we have. And it's on order and hopefully we'll be here within 6 months, but I don't know. You don't trust the delivery dates anymore. We've had a couple EVs on order that were canceled. We had 3 Ford F-150 Lightning orders that were canceled because of availability. So we're working the problem, but it's going to take some time. In objective 2, in the plan, the actions there are all about strengthening community resilience. I mentioned the water plant grant already, so I'll skip that. But another area of resilience is in stormwater runoff and preparing us for the next set of flooding. A really important study that we applied for funding and were successful. My office helped us get $100,000 from the MPCA to do a Duluth Stormwater Resiliency Plan, which is looking at where are our stormwater systems vulnerable to flooding from the next big flood. And what are those lessons learned from 2012? And what are the priorities for fixing our stormwater system? And where can we integrate green infrastructure? My office also helped apply for green infrastructure pilot projects that we'll be doing in the Keene Creek and Miller Creek watersheds in Irving Park and Lincoln Park. We're also partnered with Minnesota Sea Grant, who got a grant to look at our code to establish where in our code is a barrier for adopting green infrastructure. And lastly, the lead water line replacements that Public Works is leading is part of our community resilience work as well. We have a special problem that we get to deal with in Duluth when it comes to resiliency, and it's that we have a whole large amount of waterfront to take care of, and with changing lake levels and rising occurrence of extreme storms, this is something that we're planning for as well, and my colleagues across property facilities management are doing a great job managing several grants and projects related to coastal resiliency, so I just wanted to give them a shout out.
Can I ask you a question? I'm not sure, because we're really talking about weather here, and I'm really contemplating and having these conversations with different people about weather. And when we talk about water and flooding, typically for us, if we have a hard winter like we've had this year, the potential for flooding is greater. But overall, in general, when we talk about weather, we never really talk about storms and winter and snow and how that's becoming a greater impact. What are your thoughts, and have you been having conversations about how we can tap into maybe funding for that? Because when we do get those larger weather events, right, we're using more equipment and, you know, all that stuff comes along with it. So I'm really having thoughts and conversations about how are we leveraging snowstorms as more severe weather events, because we know community members, and we are all having issues with shoveling, with road clearing, with potholes. And is there a place for this within the work that you do?
Kennedy, that is a great question. There definitely is. And as I was going to get to on the policy part, is that we're part of statewide conversations. And so I was on 2 different work groups for the state climate action framework, advising the state on what they should include in their plan. And then also we signed on to a letter of support for some of those climate actions that are currently in the legislature right now to help fund some of those solutions for local communities. So we've spoken up at the state level about that. I could talk all night about this, but I listened to our state climatologists and their predictions for our weather, and they do predict more extreme rain events, more extreme wind events, and more snowy winters. When there's warmth and more moisture in the air, we can have snowier winters. And I think many of you might have seen our street maintenance utility coordinator, Jeff Bukalich, talk about there's way more freeze-thaw cycles, which is harder on our equipment and our roads. At the same time, we use a lot of rock salt, chloride salt, which is really hard on those. Switching to liquid brine application could be something that could help us. I just recently applied for a Minnesota Green Corps member to come here for a whole year and create a chloride reduction plan for the city of Duluth. I'm working with Jeff. He just doesn't have the time and capacity to get a plan together, but this person is going to research what are the funding options, where could we apply for funding, what would it cost, how much could we save on ordering rock salt versus brine, and then, you know, trying to imagine what's the cost estimate of savings of wear and tear on vehicles and roads and things from using less chloride. So there's not a lot of time and capacity to put those numbers together. But I've been listening to Jeff talk about it for 2 years, and I'm like, we're going to get somebody in here to help figure this out. So that's the type of work that I mentioned when I listen to my colleagues and their needs and their struggles and try to relate it to climate and funding available and put those resources together. That's a perfect example of it.
That I've been meaning to meet with you because, and I'm speaking specifically of snow, and I know there's all these other ones, but we do not have the best plan or a better plan for the snow events and the issues that come along with that. Not only the cost to the city, but the cost to our community members. So I would love to really put some folks together and be in that room a little bit. So thank you.
President Kennedy, and we'll certainly keep you in the loop. On community resiliency, we're also working on things like housing, not just affordability, but also availability. And then also, how do we tie in energy efficiency standards with projects that we fund through the city? So we did a study with the ACEEE, which is the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, and they gave us some suggestions for how to integrate energy standards into some of these funding streams that the city is responsible for. So we're slowly working through those and trying to get those adopted. On strengthening neighborhoods, we have a Love Your Block program that does learning and community connection and volunteering, and also gives away mini grants for folks to sort of strengthen their neighborhoods. And then we've also applied for and gotten some funding for urban tree canopy, accelerating the removal of ash, and then also planning for replacement of those trees is really important. And lastly, in resiliency planning, emergency response in storms is part of how we can be ready for climate change and be resilient as a community. So several staff are part of the Ready North network, and we partner with them as well in our sustainability work. And then the DOE RACER grant, which I'll talk about in a second, will focus on power outages from storms. I'm not going to talk too long about this, but we do have a Communities Leap grant with Department of Energy, which is bringing in resources and technical assistance to plan an energy blueprint for the Lincoln Park neighborhood. We talk about environmental justice in that neighborhood. We're talking about the six categories below: transportation, housing, commercial, industrial, port, utilities, and clean energy groups. And what this project is doing is taking NREL experts and trying to get them to help us imagine how do we do energy transition and how do we do it in an equitable way and not gentrify this neighborhood. One of the questions we've put to our NREL partners is, what would it cost to insulate and air seal every home in Lincoln Park? Just like tell us, like what would it cost? Like what's the number? Once we know that number, that helps to think about where we could apply for funding, how to advise state and federal weatherization programs when they're developing their programs, but also, you know, how could the city help out? What is the amount of workforce needed to do that work? And if all that investment, say it's $500 million, well, if that investment is going to happen, like, who do we want to do that work? And how do we train people so that they have access to those jobs? That's all I'll say about that, but that's a really fun grant partnered with all of the folks on the right. For objective three, we're talking about policy, and that can be at the local level and the state level and even federal level. Locally, we've adopted a building owner performance requirement for city public buildings, which helps us raise the standard for energy efficiency and sustainability in our own city projects. And then I mentioned prior the vehicle replacement policy. But staff has also looked into our solar fee schedule and came up with a revised flat fee to reduce the cost for residents who apply for a solar permit, which is great. And then there's work in our community on the Better Bus Program, which I would say is helping eliminate barriers for mass transit. And then I mentioned prior that we are engaged in some of the state framework. And also I serve on the MnDOT Sustainable Transportation Advisory Council and get to coordinate with their state level voices and our local needs. I mentioned the solar development that we partnered with Minnesota Power with because the ribbon was cut in 2022. And this is a place where we had 9.7 acres of city land that was underutilized, and we were able to broker an agreement with Minnesota Power to host their solar array there and get lease payments that go to our energy fund. And then also help them partner with them to provide solar for 300 homes. And this project was sort of an inspiration for some of the solar planning work that I'll talk about in a second. The last objective, when you go to read the report, is objective four, and it's about how do we finance and how do we come up with workforce plans for projects. And so I just wanted to take a moment to talk about some of the internal funds that I know about that we've invested for sustainability. I've mentioned a few of these already, but we have put some money aside for strategic facilities planning for energy upgrades. We put some aside for energy projects, the gap funding for vehicles to get EVs and hybrids. We've put some towards green infrastructure to try out biofiltration and native plantings in Lincoln Park. The forestry work, and then adding capacity through adding a Lead for America fellow to help us work on community resiliency. So these are some of the internal funds that we've dedicated towards climate action work. And the fun part is that some of those funds were leveraging external funds, and now the city has leveraged about $34 million in external funds for sustainability-related projects. And that's from all of these agencies, from state and federal, and even some private organizations as well. So that's the good news. What's next? I want to leave you just with a couple of things. I mentioned the Department of Energy RACER grant, which is just kicking off. This grant brought in $977,000 towards city staff salaries and contractor work to help us plan our solar and storage future. It's great timing for us to have money to plan where we want to put solar, what's technically feasible, what's economically viable, and what does the community desire. It's a great time for that discussion because of the Inflation Reduction Act funding that's coming to help local governments invest in solar. Our partners on this are University of Minnesota faculty and Equilibrium 3, and we should have a fiscal contract signed before March. First, we had hoped to have one before March 1st, but they said April 1st is when we can expect it. There's no deployment money with this grant, but the nice thing is the IRA provides some solar funds up to 60% with all of the adders if we get a really great project organized. I won't spend a lot of time on the RAISE grant, but just wanted to mention this Rebuilding America's Infrastructure with Sustainability and Equity in mind. Because as we rebuild these 1.7 miles of West Superior Street, we want to be thinking about sustainability and equity and really build the street of the future, not the past, and think about things like active transportation and EV charging, green infrastructure, tree trenches, biofiltration swales, how do we integrate more trees in our canopy, and all the good things. While we were looking at this map, we saw that red line, and our district energy system, which is downtown, has really wanted to capture the waste heat that's in the effluent from WLSSD. So you'll notice that red line sort of connects WLSSD to downtown. But it also has, you know, this environmental justice neighborhood in between it, which has suffered from the regional transportation infrastructure that is there that moves people through their neighborhood, but not necessarily within their neighborhood. So this is a great opportunity to use waste heat to heat buildings along that red line. And so we submitted a grant for geothermal heating and cooling design. We were encouraged to proceed, which means we made it through the first round. And our feasibility study partners are the City of Duluth, myself, Jim Benning, and Elena Fauché. But we're partnered with Evergreen Energy, who has a contract to manage our district energy, and then Equilibrium 3 and the Main Street Lincoln Park Group. If we are awarded the feasibility dollars, we're eligible to apply for phase two, which does provide construction deployment funding to capture waste heat from effluent and heat buildings. Initial calculation showed we could heat all of the buildings along the West Superior Street corridor in Lincoln Park and 40% of downtown buildings with waste heat and not burn any fossil fuels. So pretty cool. I've had folks from the state call me and ask me, did you hear anything yet? Which is great that the state energy office is listening to our ask to the feds. So it just shows that we're really coordinating and they're interested in that project as well. Could be really great if we get federal dollars and we can match them with state to do a really great project and decarbonize a large portion of our buildings. So we are still waiting to hear back on that. One of the things coming up that's formula funding and not competitive funding is called EECBG. Councilor Randorph, I know you have asked me before about the IIJA. This is one of the programs through the IIJA, which I waited on pins and needles and was so excited about. And everything about it is super exciting, but the amount of formula funds that Duluth is getting is pretty small. And when I talk to our property facilities management colleagues, they're like, we could spend that in about 10 minutes. So it's an exciting pathway, but they've built a voucher program to help us buy equipment, and we can avoid all of the big federal grant writing steps. It will save probably about 60% of the workload, but still get that same amount of funding in. So I've made it really clear to my Department of Energy colleagues that we want to see more programs like this from the feds and from these acts, the IRA and the IIJA, make it easier for us to get that money working for climate action. So I'm really, it's promising. And they've established sort of this pipeline of how to get funding to local governments. And my hope is that maybe it won't be the last formula fund. Maybe there will be extra. But for now, we plan to use it for heating, ventilation, and air conditioning equipment to reduce our energy load in public buildings.
Developed, and then boom, 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 you meet the criteria, and this is how much you get. Okay. And what would have to change for us to reach a higher level in that formula in order to say we're going to get more than 140?
Oh, great question. I think it's less about what the formula is and more about what that number is at the federal level that trickles down.
And then follow-up question with the Inflation Reduction Act money, the $370 million that Biden approved in August. How will that affect this? Is that plus part of this? Is that still that formula-based?
No. IIJA has several different pots of money as well. And so some of those pots of money are competitive funding, but a lot of it will go to state agencies and federal agencies for programs like weatherization. So we talk about phase two of our plan. Weatherization dollars will help our community. It might not help the city, municipal, but it will help our city and our community. With the Inflation Reduction Act, this $370 is really done through tax credits and rebates for work. Some of that is stuff we can directly deploy. So there's really four things we can do with the IRA. And part of my job right now is making sure we have all the pieces aligned internally with our staff about how we can best take advantage of all of these programs. But the first is we can deploy some stuff. IRA will provide direct pay adder and adders for solar. We can get 30% direct pay for any solar we install. If we install it in an environmental justice area, we can get an extra 10%. If we do American made, we get an extra 10%. If we're benefiting low-income people, we can get an extra 10%, up to 60% off solar projects. So we're watching that one very carefully. It's great timing when you have a grant to plan the solar deployment future for your city to have these programs coming down. I'm also looking really closely at the 179D tax credit for commercial buildings, which public entities are now eligible for. We can turn in that tax credit of $5 per square foot in a building into a payment for our vendors. So I'm watching even like the City Hall project and future, you know, possible library or other projects, and how would we take advantage of that? The criteria is to be 30% more energy efficient than code, which we will meet just by meeting our state B3 guidelines. So it's pretty exciting. And there's also some commercial clean vehicle stuff. A lot of the IRA is still to be determined because the rulemaking isn't complete. So we're all watching, like, what will the rulemaking require and what will we get? So there's a lot of hurry up and wait going on right now.
The general public will start seeing some of this. Like right now, to put solar on just the average Duluthian's home, there's not an ROI on that. It's so expensive to put it on that it's, even with some of the rebates that they provide, it just doesn't, the math doesn't work. Will any of this money filter down, say we're going to see more people put solar?
President Kennedy, Vice President Randorph, yes. The residential tax credit will be 30%. And that will be not something that you have to compete for, like the Minnesota power rebates, which you have to apply at March 1st, like at midnight, to try to get into the pool of the people who get selected for the rebate. This will be a standard 30% direct pay. So I imagine both commercial and residential solar adoption will increase with the IRA.
I have a question that maybe leans on that a little bit, but not maybe directly. It feels like that one is more for individual homeowners, and it doesn't matter which neighborhood you live in. But I know a lot of these programs and a lot of these rebates are set up to work on the core areas, Lincoln Park, downtown, and any city buildings. But we have other parts of the city and other folks who are in need just as much, right, but not in those pocket neighborhoods. So how do we create pilot areas for different strategies so that people are feeling that they're getting just as much investment, but not maybe the same? What is the plan for that?
President Kennedy, Vice President Randorf, number one is deploy to do the work ourselves, but when we can do number three and four, which is support and partner with community-based organizations who are eligible for a lot of these, and even our state agency, like the State Energy Office, and then assisting folks to access these. And one of the things that I'm struggling with right now is how can the city play a role in either empowering community-based orgs or ourselves and our conservation program at our utility? How can we better get the word out and empower people and do educational campaigns and let people know what they can get? Right now, we're utilizing the Communities Leap and NREL data, and we've asked those folks to help us launch some of these programs and get the word out during Earth Week, which will be taking place next month. We're going to have a Earth Fest. We're going to have a business breakfast where we kind of, you know, help businesses know what's available in IRA. And then we're going to have a meeting for a school district and other public buildings to say, here's what you're eligible for. And we've asked our NREL colleagues to come to Duluth. They're going to come to Duluth and offer some of these programs and expertise. We've also asked them for sort of a decision matrix tool so that you could like surf through and say, I live in this neighborhood. My medium family income is below this level or above this level. And then it will check boxes and tell you, here's what you're eligible for. Folks who have 80% of area mean income or below are eligible for up to $14,000 for appliance replacements, electrical upgrades, furnace replacements, solar, like a bunch of stuff. So how do you get that word out and make it easy? We need a calculator or a decision tree or something really easy.
Yeah, and I will say that's not just folks who are on the lower income spectrum that need support, especially nowadays. Working families and individuals and even seniors all need that support. So,
President Kenny, some of the tax credits in IRA will apply no matter what your income is. Access those. Yep. So it's a lot of hurry up and wait, waiting for the actual guidelines to be written. But we're going to deploy. We're going to apply for grants. We're going to support and partner others in our community and then really assist folks in accessing those. That's the role of cities here. And one of the things that we've done is go in front of the leadership team and present about the IRA. And we kind of made everybody raise your hand, like, do any of you work with any of these federal agencies? You should know about these grant programs. So we're trying to keep all of my colleagues and staff within the city excited and watching for these programs, too, so that nothing passes us by and those opportunities don't pass us by. So that's why I put those in there, just to remind us that it's coming. So I wanted to thank you and let you know that the full climate action progress report and all, there's four tables for each of those objectives with all the details of all the progress that you can go read at your leisure. And just thank you for your time.
Counselors, any questions, thoughts? Go ahead and popcorn out because I'm not sure the mics are going.
You, Mindy, it was this afternoon I returned a call to a constituent that was ostensibly about snowbanks and plowing, and it turns out that it was a conference call between this person and their spouse, and they just wanted to yell at me about all kinds of things, including you. And I just wanted to say, tell you publicly that I had your back, and I'm so grateful. I mean, we look at $34 million in funds that have come in related to sustainability and resiliency for our community. And like, this is just, it's incredible. And I'm really grateful to see that you have a couple of interns and potentially one of these days we'll have a path to having another person like fully in your office. I see CAO Shuckman is shaking his head behind you. nodding his head in support. Not yet. Yeah, so just rock on and take good care as you do this really vital work for all, on behalf of all of us.
President Kenny, thank you. Councilor Anderson.
Thank you so much. I'll echo Officer Granley. We've been calling you Director Granley, Officer Granley, President Granley. I don't know. We've gotten your title all mixed up, but Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for the presentation. If you had to distill it and say the top two wins of this last year, would you say it's the $34 million in funds and the community geothermal potential? Or what would you say like your two top would be?
I think my top would be that we got a climate action work plan across the finish line and we got agreement. We have organizational agreement across the city about these are our goals for climate action. This is what's going to help our community and these are our needs. So I would say that's my top win is getting to that agreement, because then it's really easy to go to these directors and the staff and say, hey, we decided on this priority. How are we going to get this done? So how do we do it? So I would say that's number one. And then probably funding is number two. Yeah.
And then my last follow-up, what can we do as a council, either resolution-wise, budget-wise, to maximize these resources and help you move farther, faster?
President Kennedy, Vice President Randorf, the number one thing that you can do is just fully fund staff and capacity at the city in every single department, and then increase our capital budgets for building and equipment. We have a lot of deferred maintenance in our buildings and our equipment and our fleet. And then sometimes the ability to apply for a program or a grant or do something different is just a matter of not having enough people and hours to do the work. I find staff to be really motivated around this topic and they want to do the right thing, but sometimes it's just you don't have the time and you don't have the staff to dedicate to it. So for sure, fully funding staff capacity in every department. It'd be nice if I could say, oh, just give me this money. But like, that's not where it's needed. It's needed sort of across the organization for us to be at full capacity to do this work. And then the other one would be to just ask questions about how is this helping our climate goals? How is this helping our energy goals? And then ask those questions, not just of city staff, but ask them of your neighbors and your friends and the business owners that you talk to and the industry folks and our community-based organizations too, because there's a lot of work coming and there's a lot of incentives for all of us to do this work.
I have Mr. Shuckman in the queue. Councilors, are you ready for Mr. Shuckman?
Thank you, President Kennedy. Just briefly, I wanted to just say I couldn't have scripted that answer any better. So thank you, Ms. Granley, for that. Ms. Granley referenced her start date of essentially weeks before the pandemic, and while nobody holds her responsible for the pandemic, I think it is worth noting a couple things. One, she really does not like being praised publicly. And so you've all, thank you for doing that. I'm going to continue that. And just very briefly say that she had to start this job online. And having met many of our colleagues once or just a handful of times. And to do that, and be as successful as she clearly has been is really a testament to the extraordinary work that she does. I don't intend to hold her to an average of a $10 million per year grant income moving forward, but it is a testament to the investment that the council has made in this position, the city has made in this position, and the incredible returns that we get both in terms of one big project award, but even if you take that one out, that's still $9 million over a three-year period that is the direct result of the work of Mindy and her team. And I want to just make sure that that is said very clearly and publicly, and it is a credit to her. She's been very nice to credit the work that our staff have done prior to her arrival. That is deserved. And also, it was like putting gasoline in a rocket when Ms. Granley arrived. And so we're all seeing the benefit of that, and we're fortunate to have her, and we will see that moving in the future. And so I just want to take the opportunity to really be clear about what it's like to work with her day to day and to thank her for that and to thank you for recognizing that. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Councilor Wall.
Thank you so much for your presentation. Thank you, President Kennedy and Vice President Randorf. I echo the administration's sentiments, but I also applaud just your team. Seeing the VISTAs, the Lead for America, and the student interns just bring a lot of joy to me to know that we're getting our youth and our young folks engaged. And I would love to see the city get more interns and, support of the amazing colleges that are here in the Twin Ports area, and then get our young folks excited. And I had the honor and privilege of working directly with one of your interns. She's one of, Ella is also one of my students that I work closely with. And I see the impact, your impact, even through her work at UMD, being the director of sustainability with Student Association. So your work is not just impacting our city, but it's impacting lives that are going to be our future leaders. So thank you.
And President Kennedy and Vice President Randorf and Councillor Aul, like, that's my favorite part of this job, is to do that. And that is something that sometimes takes time and capacity and space away from other things that we could do to bring in interns and VISTAs. But I think it's really important and it's part of that training and for the future. And it's my favorite part of the job. And I begged to have it, and everyone was helpful in helping me get that done. So thanks to all the staff and the clerks in IT that helped me problem solve every time we bring in interns and work with them. So it's a labor of love.
Thank you so much for all your work. We are complete for tonight. Thank you, everyone.